we set up a program in South Africa using WhatsApp very quickly after the pandemic started. And within 2 weeks, we were doing the same for the World Health Organization, an organization that had never spoken directly to citizens. We then got inundated with requests from governments. Governments who, when we'd spoken to about this in the past around maternal health issues or around HIV, brought the skepticism. When nobody had the information, when nobody knew where to go, when everybody was looking for answers, so not just the other, not just the poor, not just the disenfranchised, suddenly it was obvious that we needed to set up these kinds of systems.
This is Mission to Scale, a podcast that reveals the tools, mindsets, and strategies that organizations and funders need to maximize their impact. Because the world's biggest problems need solutions at scale. I'm your host, Dan Beredovitz, founder of Spring Impact. If you're even remotely involved in social change, I bet you've heard of the Skoll Awards for Social Entrepreneurship. Each year, the Skoll Foundation employs a rigorous process to select people and their organizations who've had a significant impact on the world's most pressing problems. As a social innovator, it's one of the most prestigious honors one can get. In this series, we at Spring Impact combined forces with Skoll to reveal how the 2023 awardees are targeting societal problems and scaling solutions. From instigating ways to protect our planet and democracies, to advancing racial health and equity, this year's awardees are truly moving the needle on today's challenges. I've learned a huge amount from hearing from these leaders, and I'm sure you will too.
We've learned many lessons, and we're definitely bringing those with us. But we've got an approach that we've tested. It has evidence behind it. It has years of operational success behind it. And we want to bring that to the world.
That's Debbie Rogers, CEO at Reach Digital Health, previously named ProKelt. Reach Digital Health is one of the pioneers in using mobile technology to directly communicate with people about their health. What's special about their solution is that citizens not only receive one-way messages, they can also respond and ask questions directly to the healthcare system. This way, Reach Digital Health isn't just helping people take control over their well-being, it's also helping governments gain a real-time understanding of the public health landscape. Today, Debbie shares how Reach Digital Health is fundamentally improving how citizens engage with the healthcare system. Reach Digital Health was created by Gustav ProKelt in 2007.
Really with the idea that there were so many challenges that South Africa and Africa were facing, particularly in the health sphere and particularly at the time within the space of HIV. And then at the same time, there was this huge opportunity, which was that mobile phones were becoming available to people who had never had access to that kind of personalized communication before. In fact, you know, in so-called low and middle income countries, there was more access to mobile phones than there was often in some of the higher income countries because of the fact that there was other infrastructure available in higher income countries. So there was suddenly this personalized way that we could communicate directly to people, even at the bottom of the pyramid. And it seemed like an amazing opportunity to be able to try and address some of these issues.
Mobile phone ownership in South Africa was even surpassing that of countries in the global north. Gustav decided to leverage this opportunity to tackle the then overwhelming impact of HIV.
It was really one of the peak moments of the HIV crisis in the country. At the time, there was very little access to antiretroviral medication. Really only those with the very lowest of CD4 counts was able to access it. But the stigma was also so high that many people, even if they were able to access antiretroviral treatment, were not doing so. And so really at the time, there was a pervading sentiment that HIV was a death sentence. 30% of pregnant mothers, for example, were HIV positive, and many of them finding out for the first time when they went to their first antenatal visit that they were indeed HIV positive. it was affecting all parts of our community and economy. People were dying much younger than they should have. Maternal and child health was in a terrible way because of transmission from mothers to children. There were many AIDS orphans and many really tiny babies who were infected with HIV. And so it was a communal crisis in the country.
The team at Reach Digital Health wasn't sure how to begin tackling this issue, so they decided to start small. They visited a clinic in Johannesburg and asked the staff what their biggest issue was when treating HIV. They discovered a great number of HIV patients, about 30%, weren't coming back for their appointments.
An appointment sounds really sophisticated for what this was. It was a day when you went there and you would spend the entire day, probably, at the clinic to see nurses and doctors for a very short period of time and then to receive your medication. If they did not have money for transport that day, they would miss their appointment. If, for example, they had to work that day for some reason, they would miss their appointment. And there was no way for them to get another appointment. So once it was missed, it was gone. And so you can imagine the huge burden on people. If for some reason they miss something, there's no way that they can get back to this. So what we set up was a very simple thing. I mean, my hairdresser has appointment reminders now, but at the time it was very different. Appointment reminder SMSs, 2 weeks and 2 days before the appointment. But most importantly, the ability to send a free message and somebody would call you back and reschedule your appointment for you if you sent that message. And so suddenly people had control over this very important part of their lives.
With this simple text messaging tool, Reach Digital Health was able to reduce the amount of people who didn't return to their appointments from nearly a third of patients to just 6%. Once the HIV crisis subsided, they decided to tackle other health issues. In 2014, they partnered with the National Department of Health in South Africa to implement Mum Connect. Their goal was to improve the health of expecting mothers in a region with the highest maternal mortality rate in the world.
The mother has come in, she said that she wants to be enrolled in Mom Connect. The nurse uses this very simple system which requires no infrastructure to be available at a clinic and is able to sign this person up. That data is then fed through to a central repository where there's a pregnancy registry and various pieces of data that go into a central health information system at the National Department of Health. But from the mother's side, what she gets is messages on a weekly basis, depending on where she is in her pregnancy. So if she's 14 weeks pregnant, she needs different information to if she's got a 1 week old baby. And so she receives that messaging from the time when she first signs up until the baby is 2 years old to care for herself and for her baby. This is things like trying to get her to go to antenatal visits, because we know that if people go to antenatal visits, they are more likely to have healthy pregnancies and healthy babies, to immunize children, to ensure that danger signs during pregnancy are recognized and acted upon. And we were also directly communicating to maternal health nurses to help to empower them, because obviously once a mother goes into a clinic, she's often going to encounter a nurse who is under-resourced, very stressed out, demotivated. You know, we have in sub-Saharan Africa, 24% of the disease burden and 3% of the health workers. It's obvious that health workers are going to be under a lot of strain. So there was also that direct communication to them to be able to support them.
But what made this program truly revolutionary was that women weren't only receiving text messages, they were also able to reply and ask questions.
They get feedback. They are able to rate the services that they receive and participate in surveys that help us to understand better what's going on the ground. Mothers can ask any question they want. It either responds automatically if we can easily pick up what the mother is asking and it's a simple response, or it gets fed through to a help desk. There are four people sitting at the National Department of Health in South Africa who respond to all the questions from the mothers. And so there's this two-way dialogue that happens. And that's really I think, one of the amazing parts about it. I mean, how many of us have access to our clinicians, let alone like the national Department of Health, direct communication with them? It seems it's a very unusual thing to have in your hands. And so I think that's really one of the great things. But yeah, so this is the, you know, how we support mothers throughout their pregnancy. Of course, one of the big things that happened when we started rolling this out at scale is suddenly, yes, we were getting this two-way communication, but some of the things we were getting from people were things we had never expected. For example, we were able to pick up a shortage of iron folate throughout the country before any stockout systems were able to pick it up. Because if you tell a mother to take her iron folate and she goes to a clinic and there's no iron folate and she has a way to tell you that, trust me, she will tell you very quickly that there's no iron folate. And so we were picking these things up from the feedback from mothers that we'd never designed the system to do it. But this was the kind of thing that, you know, empowering people in their own health journey, suddenly we were getting this feedback.
Mum Connect improved both the health of pregnant mothers and South Africa's healthcare system. But skepticism about their value was still prevalent, partly because Reach Digital Health's programs lacked a randomized control trial. RCTs use experimental and control groups and are considered by most to be the gold standard of impact evidence.
There was a sort of certain amount of skepticism based on just when we see the evidence, maybe we'll believe. And so that was, you know, a very fair thing. But I do think that there was also a certain kind of arrogance behind it. I think that the people making the decisions around healthcare are governments, they are clinicians, they are highly educated people who believe that the power lies with them to solve the health issues of the populace. And so I think there was just a skepticism of, you know, so I tell this person to do this thing or I give them information, it's not really going to make a difference because we need to treat disease at a clinic. And so that kind of skepticism, I think, was just innate in how people think about it.
But the emergence of the COVID-19 pandemic brought down these barriers.
Suddenly, when nobody had the information, when nobody knew where to go, when everybody was looking for answers, so not just the other, not just the poor, not just the disenfranchised, suddenly it was obvious that we needed to set up these kinds of systems. You know, we set up a program in South Africa using WhatsApp very quickly after the pandemic started. And within 2 weeks, we were doing the same for the World Health Organization, an organization that had never spoken directly to citizens. It was not in their wheelhouse. They spoke to member states and they spoke to researchers and they spoke to clinicians, but not to citizens of the world. We then got inundated with requests from governments to be able to implement a similar program. Governments who, when we'd spoken to about this in the past around maternal health issues or around HIV, brought the skepticism. But because it was affecting them, because it was affecting everybody, everyone needed the information, everyone saw the value of it. Suddenly, there wasn't a need for randomized control trials. There was just an understanding that this is a useful thing to have and that it's important for us to empower people with information and to make sure that they are able to walk through their health journey with information and services behind them and not just be reliant completely on the healthcare system, or as Dr. Tedros likes to call it, the sick care system, because that's really what it is often set up for, is treating disease rather than helping people to be healthy.
Reach Digital Health addressed this need by setting up a messaging service people could use to ask questions about COVID. They approached the World Health Organization to get answers.
And said to them, you guys are the source of the information at the moment. You are the ones who are able to tell us what's going on. And please, will you provide us with the content so that we can deliver it through these simple platforms? Because you're doing press conferences and you have websites, but there is a huge number of people, particularly in low and middle income countries, but all over the world, who don't have access to that, who need to be able to be given this information in a different format, in a more accessible way, in a cheaper way. And so, knowing that we had high quality content in a highly scalable way to communicate to people, I think that was really the thing that where people were like, oh yeah, that makes absolute sense. Yeah, we definitely need that thing. And it wasn't complicated at the time. Honestly, it was just some information. It evolved. I mean, we did things like vaccine registration. We did things like COVID-19 screening that helped us to identify outbreaks. It evolved into something much more complex, but just the need for information was the start of it.
As the pandemic progressed, Reach Digital Health quickly began working outside of South Africa.
Interestingly enough, you know, you do your annual planning, and at the beginning of 2020, we had said, okay, in 5 years' time, we would like to have taken Mom Connect to 5 other countries. And so that was our plan. And within 3 months of the COVID pandemic happening, we were in 11 countries with our work and with the National Department of Health. So that was the acceleration. I think it really was a case of people just putting their skepticism aside and saying, okay, we need this, let's do it. And that massive growth. We definitely expanded faster than we could support across all countries. And we knew that we weren't going to be able to. So we worked with partners, and we got partners on the ground and said, okay, we'll give you the technology, we'll give you the content, but we won't necessarily be able to run everything. So you're going to need to take this on. And depending on the partners, some were very successful and some were not. So there's definitely been more of an understanding in general that we need to communicate directly to citizens from those governments.
Now, governments all around the world are beginning to realize the power of mobile technology to improve the lives of their citizens.
Many of them are now saying, we had a COVID-19 line. COVID-19 isn't the main concern, but how do we expand this to maternal health? How do we expand this to TB? How do we take this and turn it into the way that people communicate with us? And so there are a number of governments, I'd say probably around 40% of those that we served initially, who have recognized that this has to be a way that they're going to continue to engage with people, which I think is huge. But I think the understanding that this direct to citizen communication is important, that there's a role for technology to play in that, that's going to make it more sustainable and is going to reduce the burden on the health system, that certainly has started to change in the eyes of many more governments than before the pandemic. The National Department of Health in South Africa is expanding that service to all kinds of health concerns. So they see it as like the way that people can get access to information from the National Department of Health, the way that we can serve people outside of the clinics. We can serve them with this kind of service. And so we've expanded to TB, for example, and non-communicable diseases and quitting smoking, etc. So I think the most telling thing is that the World Health Organization has expanded their efforts to communicate directly to citizens. They are also expanding beyond COVID-19 because it is not as big an issue right now, and into other health areas. But they are still continuing with direct to citizen communication through channels that we've developed, but also through others. You know, they've started to see this as an integral part of what the WHO can do within the health system.
As promising as this sounds, Debbie knows that to efficiently implement these programs all around the world, we need to invest time and resources.
I think one of the big things is definitely around just making sure that people have an understanding of the power of speaking directly to citizens. And so being able to create case studies, being able to do studies, randomized control trials, but also other studies, not everyone can do a randomized control trial, to show the effect of this. And as more and more people are doing this kind of thing, you know, being able to build up the evidence. And unless we have enough evidence to support a digital health program, it is going to be challenging for them to be able to justify a budget spend. So that's really important. I think the other thing really is for funders to think beyond health domains and to think about what are the cross-cutting health strengthening elements that can be funded that are going to help beyond just a health domain. And so I think digital health is one of those. We might implement something in maternal health, but that doesn't mean it's not just as useful within sexual reproductive health and rights for youth, for example. So we can't keep building new projects for each different health domain. We have to be able to see this as like an infrastructural investment for a country. And right now, that still relies on initially some funding from aid agencies or donors or philanthropy to get that up and running. For most of the countries that we work in, they're not able to invest in that initial cost of setting it up. we can't make citizens pay for this, not in the space that we're working. It reduces the ability to scale. And it also means that, unfortunately, you're not reaching the hardest to reach. And so we know that if this is an infrastructural thing, if this is an extension of a public healthcare system, we can't get citizens to pay. So someone does have to pay, ultimately, for the system to be set up. And that will be governments going forward. They need to start seeing digital infrastructure the same way they see physical infrastructure and the investment in it.
What does the future look like, though? What's the vision for when this is really working?
The ultimate vision for us is that people have a thing that is directly accessible to them, something in their hands through a personalized medium. And right now, that's the mobile phone, right? And that thing gives them access to the healthcare system without having to physically go to it. We don't see this as replacing the healthcare system, but we see it as an extension of the healthcare system. So where some people might have to travel 3 hours to get to a clinic and so ignore a danger sign in pregnancy, for example, they now are empowered to say, actually, this is a reason you have to go to the clinic. You do need to go there now. Or perhaps they say, you know, I've got a headache and it doesn't seem that there's any risk and they don't have to go to the health system. So they're not unfairly burdening themselves or burdening the already strained healthcare system. And so we really see that simple technologies that people use every single day, they shouldn't be an app you have to download or something difficult you have to do. Just using the thing you use to communicate to your mom and your sister and your friends, you can also communicate to the National Department of Health. And you can know when to treat disease, but also live a healthier life. And therefore, really scaling the health system in a way that physical facilities and training health workers and all of these things that are really important just hasn't been able to crack. Because it's like filling a leaking bucket at the moment. You know, training health workers is filling a leaking bucket because they're so stressed that they're leaving the system. We can't continue doing the same old things and expect to reach universal health care by 2030. It's simply not going to happen unless we change the way we do things. And so this highly scalable way to extend the health system, remove the burden from the health system to a certain degree, focus on preventative rather than treatment of disease, that really would be the vision in the future.
Debbie hopes that the Skoll Award will open doors for partnerships that will allow them to scale even further.
We're very proud to be an African organization because we believe in innovation from the global south being more effective, actually, than innovation from the global north being parachuted in. But we play in a different space. We're not sitting in Seattle next to some of the biggest funders or having lunch with people in London. That's not the world that we're playing in. And so being able to take organizations from all over the world, put them to the same rigor that people might expect for so-called Global North organizations and say, look, these are the exemplars throughout the world who are doing amazing work and put that on the center stage for an audience who has the money, has the power, you know, is coming from that space is incredible because it's not the easiest thing to do when you are an organization from the global south to be able to have your name out there in the way that I think the Skoll Award is going to allow us to.
We often believe we need complex solutions to address big problems. Today's conversation shows that it's not always the case, as long as you know how to innovate. If you want to learn more about Reach Digital Health, you can visit www.reachdigitalhealth.org. If you're interested in learning more about the Skoll Awards, don't forget to visit the link in our show notes. Before we go, we'd like to thank the Skoll Foundation for the work that they do and for partnering with us in this series. If you love Mission to Scale, please recommend our show to a friend or colleague. You can subscribe or follow our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Thanks so much for joining us, and I'll catch you all in the new episode next week. Mission to Scale is produced by Spring Impact and Human Group Media. If you want to learn more about our work at Spring Impact, visit springimpact.org and follow us at Spring Impact on Twitter.